In this edition of our collective nightmare, we turn our weary eyes south to Chile, where the presidential election reads like a dystopian novel that even Orwell would have found too bleak. Imagine a menu with options so unappetizing you'd rather starve. That's what Chileans are facing as they shuffle toward the voting booths. Leading the pack is Jeanette Jara, a Communist Party member who's been trying to shake off her own party's baggage like a dog shedding fleas. She promises development through domestic production and workers' rights while simultaneously planning to build more jails. It seems she wants to both nurture and incarcerate her nation, because nothing says progress quite like more prison cells. On the other side of this political circus tent is José Antonio Kast, an ultra-conservative whose campaign slogan might as well be "Make Chile Great Again," because subtlety is for losers. He dreams of trenches at the border and mass deportations, policies that echo across continents from Washington, D.C. to Santiago. His father's alleged Nazi ties are brushed aside in favor of focusing on how many walls he can build before lunchtime. And let's not forget Johannes Kaiser, a libertarian so far right he makes Genghis Khan look like a centrist yoga instructor. This YouTuber turned politician wants austerity measures and has wild fantasies about shipping criminals off to El Salvador's most notorious prison, because apparently outsourcing isn't just for call centers anymore. The common thread here: crime rates soaring higher than your average billionaire's ego, leaving voters clutching their pearls and their wallets as they navigate this minefield of fear-mongering policies disguised as solutions. So what awaits Chile? A runoff election if no one secures half the votes, a second act in this tragicomedy where hope takes center stage only to be booed off by reality. Political analyst Guillermo Holzman suggests that it's the extreme right finding validation now, becoming not just sensible but electable. Because when faced with chaos, humanity tends to run straight into the arms of authoritarianism faster than you can say, historical amnesia, Chile stands on the brink, or maybe it's already fallen over it. And all that's left is for us to watch helplessly from afar as another country wrestles with its demons while we continue dancing with our own back home under Trump II, electric boogaloo. Insecurity reigns supreme, uncertainty is king, and yet somehow life goes on in this endless cycle of absurdity where every choice feels wrong but necessary, like choosing between stepping on Legos or hot coals barefooted. Welcome to 2025, hold onto whatever shreds of sanity you've got left, because we're going to need them before long.
Of Michelle Obama, the woman who made kale cool and sleeveless dresses a political statement, she's out here reminding us that America isn't quite ready for a woman president. And let's be honest, she's right. I mean, we can handle the complexities of ordering a half CAF soy milk latte with a shot of caramel at Starbucks, but electing a woman to the highest office? Whoa there, slow down. You know it's bad when even Michelle Obama is like, "Don't look at me, you guys aren't ready." It's like when your mom tells you not to touch the hot stove and you're like, "But what if this time it doesn't burn?" Spoiler alert, it always burns. And then there's Kamala Harris' run for the White House last year. It was like watching someone try to introduce quinoa to Thanksgiving dinner. Everyone nods politely, but deep down, they're just not buying it. Michelle says we have some growing up to do. Meanwhile, we're over here debating whether pineapple belongs on pizza as if it's the next constitutional amendment. Priorities. The former First Lady also took a moment to promote her new book about fashion and politics during her White House years, because nothing screams leadership readiness like being able to rock both diplomacy and designer heels simultaneously. But really, folks, think about it. If we can rally around pumpkin spice season every fall with religious fervor, maybe one day we can wrap our heads around a woman leading the country without breaking into hives. Until then, we'll keep pretending that assembling IKEA furniture is our biggest challenge in life, while ignoring the fact that voting for a female president might actually require reading instructions. And no one wants to do that.
Ah, Venezuela, America's latest playground for military might and diplomatic finesse. President Donald Trump, fresh off his re-election victory and clearly not one to rest on his laurels, has decided to turn his gaze southward. It appears he's had a week of high-level briefings that have left him sort of with a decision on how best to handle the situation in Venezuela. Because when it comes to international relations, sort of is precisely the level of decisiveness we all crave. The U.S. military has rolled out an impressive show of force in the Caribbean under the catchy moniker Operation Southern Spear. With over 15,000 troops and a fleet that includes the USS Gerald R. Ford, our most lethal combat platform, it seems we're ready to remind everyone just how much we love flexing our naval muscles. Trump's team has laid out various tantalizing options. Airstrikes on strategic targets, or perhaps something as bold as taking down Maduro himself. After all, nothing says diplomatic resolution quite like a potential regime change orchestrated by foreign powers. But let's not forget, there's always the possibility he could just do nothing at all, a strategy that's worked wonders in other global hotspots. Of course, there are risks involved. Those pesky little things like possible insurgencies or creating another geopolitical quagmire a la Afghanistan or Vietnam. But think of the rewards. A shiny new government in Caracas, more amenable to U.S. interests, could mean better control over drug flows and maybe even sweet oil deals. Maduro warns against turning Venezuela into another war-torn landscape, but what does he know? Surely our track record speaks for itself. Meanwhile, back home, some members of Trump's own coalition are scratching their heads at this potential plunge into Latin American affairs. After all, wasn't staying out of foreign conflicts part of what got him elected? But fear not. The administration assures us they can whip up a legal justification if needed. A comforting thought indeed, as we potentially march toward another overseas adventure nobody asked for. So buckle up, America. As we navigate this brave new world where military intervention is both an art form and a pastime, let's sit back and watch how Operation Southern Spear unfolds with bated breath, and maybe some popcorn too.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder life's most pressing questions while sipping our metaphorical coffee in the absurd cafe of existence. Today, we explore an article from Reuters titled Vatican Meeting, which might make you question if reality is just a poorly scripted movie with no director. Picture this, Hollywood stars and directors hobnobbing at the Vatican with Pope Leo XIV. Yes, you heard that right. Pope Leo XIV, the first American pope, who apparently has a penchant for New York Knicks jerseys. Because nothing screams spiritual enlightenment like sports memorabilia. In this peculiar gathering, the pontiff declares cinema a workshop of hope. Now, isn't that something? Hope. A concept as elusive as finding meaning in a Michael Bay film. Yet here we are, told by His Holiness that movies can guide us to our purpose. One wonders if he's seen any recent blockbusters or simply clings to classics like It's a Wonderful Life and The Sound of Music, where goodness is fragile but revolutionary. Much like trying to find Wi-Fi in the Vatican's Apostolic Palace. The event was intended to deepen dialogue between the church and cinema. The church reaching out to an industry known for its sequels and reboots feels akin to Sisyphus inviting his boulder over for tea, an exercise in futility dressed up as progress. But let's not forget why these cinematic luminaries gathered. Declining cinema audiences and dwindling religious significance. A 17-point drop in Americans who consider religion vital suggests people are more interested in Netflix marathons than Sunday Mass. Perhaps they seek salvation through streaming services rather than stained glass windows. And yet, amidst this existential quagmire, there's irony in Pope Leo, lamenting disappearing cinemas while urging cooperation to affirm their cultural value. In an age where attention spans rival those of goldfish and TikTok dances dictate trends, one must ask, is it truly about preserving culture or merely nostalgia for popcorn-scented theaters? As Kate Blanchett reacts post-meeting with Pope Leo, presumably pondering whether playing Queen Elizabeth prepared her for papal encounters, we're reminded that life often feels like an unscripted improv session where everyone forgot their lines. So here we find ourselves questioning, does art imitate life or does life imitate art? Or perhaps both are just reflections of humanity's eternal search for meaning amid chaos, a quest destined never to be fulfilled but endlessly entertaining nonetheless. Join us next time on the Existential Crisis Hour as we continue dissecting existence one ironic chuckle at a time. Until then, remember, if all else fails, there's always reruns.
In the capitalist fever dream, the farce of affordability dances mockingly on the stage of economic policy. President Donald Trump, in a move that epitomizes the absurdity of our times, has exempted select agricultural imports from his own tariffs. Yet these exemptions, dubbed taco by traders for Trump's tendency to backtrack when faced with real-world consequences, are unlikely to alleviate the financial burdens crushing the average American. The promise of cheaper goods is dangled like a carrot before consumers, But this illusion shatters under scrutiny. The so-called relief comes only if importers and retailers decide to pass savings down, a decision driven not by altruism, but by profit margins and market manipulation. Bananas serve as a poignant example. Despite potential tariff reductions, consumer prices remain inflated, a testament to corporate greed overriding any notion of fairness. Amidst this chaos, the administration spins tales blaming past leadership for current woes. Inflation is painted as a relic of Joe Biden's presidency, conveniently ignoring how tariffs themselves have exacerbated economic strain. The narrative is simple yet insidious. Distract with blame while perpetuating policies that ensure wealth flows upwards. Economists watch this spectacle unfold with grim resignation. They understand that tariffs are but one cog in a vast machine designed to maintain inequality under the guise of free markets and national prosperity. Prices will continue their inexorable climb because they must. Stagnation spells disaster for those who profit from perpetual growth. As Americans grapple with rising costs and stagnant wages, they find themselves trapped in an unending cycle where promises of relief are mere echoes in an economy built on exploitation and excess. The capitalist fever dream persists, a nightmarish vision where every policy shift serves not to uplift, but to entrench power further into the hands of those already holding it tightly. In this dystopian landscape, hope fades as reality sets in. Affordability is not just elusive, it's systematically denied by design.